T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Carey is at Jonah Carey on Twitter. He of the Opener podcast and Sportsnet. And he joins us in the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello, Jonah.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Thanks for changing up your schedule. It feels like a Friday anyway because we're here at Gallagher Way at Wrigley Field where the White Sox are going to play two against the Cubs. Anything of note in this particular matchup other than the fact that both call the same city home?
Yeah, I mean, the White Sox are getting inching closer to playoff contention here. They're kind of hanging in, a couple games below 500 and have a chance to do some damage. Obviously, we know about the Cubs. They're in a real dogfight at the top of the Central, but you cannot discount the fact that the second wild card in the AL is sort of unsettled right now, and if the White Sox were to come away with a series win here, that could make a big difference.
If you look at the division, though, the AL Central, what case would you rather make for the White Sox if you were running them? Would you push a little bit, whether that's promotion of your own guys or maybe an addition that made sense without giving up way too much? We were talking a little bit about the precarious situation the Indians find themselves in with Jose Ramirez being bad now, apparently, and maybe trading Trevor Bauer, yeah. All that stuff.
And also looking at the White Sox second and third order record, which says with their run differential, they're not as good as their current record is.
No question about it. Those have been concerns. The bullpen being pretty good has helped the White Sox, or at least the back of the bullpen being pretty good has helped the White Sox sort of defy the odds a little bit in that respect. You know, Dylan Cease would be the guy that you would think, well, maybe he could be the one who's called up. But he struggled a little bit lately in his last couple starts here. All of a sudden, we're looking at a ton of base runners. He's 20, walked 25 batters in 57 and two-thirds. So he'd be the obvious one, but there's a little bit of a struggle. The thing about the White Sox, though, is that, you know, they don't necessarily need to trade away their number one, number two, number three prospects to improve their club. I think there's something here because if you are a team like the White Sox, you can look at it the way that the Padres have. You know, they went out and they got a Hosmer and they went out and they got Machado. And they said, well, even if we don't win this year, we feel like we can win soon. So I think there's something there. I think that there are parts that can be dealt. There are minor league parts that can be dealt to get upgrades here and there. You know, that's kind of what I would want to see. Yolmer Sanchez, for instance, should not be playing every day. You'd want to have a remedy for something like that. Their outfield could stand to be a little bit better. You could potentially have a remedy for something like that. You don't need to go out and get Mike Trout to make yourself a better team.
Now, your podcast is called The Opener, and meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Rays, who have always been on the forefront of new baseball ideas, are testing something out in the minors. At AAA, they are using two-way openers. They are going to have pitchers who can also play positions in a way that will allow them roster flexibility and lineup flexibility. What say you about this experimentation?
I mean, it's hard. That's the thing. It's impressive that they're even trying it because this is tough to do. It's not like you're saying to somebody, hey, change your launch angle or try to bunt more or do whatever. You're saying nurture two disparate skills because one has to come at the expense of the other. I mean, that's the thing about being a two-way player is that, you know, in Little League, oftentimes the best guy plays a shortstop and pitcher. Sometimes you'll see that in the high school too, but eventually goes away because if you want to be the best you can be and maybe be a major leaguer, you're going to have to really focus on your swing or you're going to have to focus on your curveball, and that's it. And so the fact that you've got two guys doing this is very interesting. Brendan McKay is the one that stands out. You know, he was the number one draft pick. He's the one who was really touted as a two-way player. He hasn't hit a ton. I don't know that I'd want him as my designated hitter. He's a replaceable designated hitter based on his minor league numbers, but his pitching's been dynamite. The guy who's kind of more interesting to me in a way, just because I hadn't heard that much about him, it's a guy named Jake Cronenworth, who's been doing pretty well. You know, he's served as an opener only, but so far he's been pitching relatively well and hanging on to that role in a handful of appearances. And, as far as at the plate, he's hitting 358, 47, 562. I mean, those are monster numbers. So that's somebody who all of a sudden becomes interesting as maybe a prospect who might not have been on the radar as much. He's a seventh round draft pick, a good prospect, but not an elite one. And all of a sudden you're saying, wait a minute, we've got a, you know, middle infielder, a shortstop type who can really hit potentially and can give us an inning or two here or there. I mean, that's huge.
Is a potential barrier to this having enough guys who can do what Cronenworth and McKay can do in your system? Like, if your system of whatever it is, 150, 200 players or something, and you have three or four guys that can do it, it puts a lot of stress on those guys. If you had more who could do it but maybe not as well, you'd be able to test this system out a little bit more without some of the fear.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to player development, right? It's like anything else. We've been talking about player development a lot on the show recently. And I'm of the belief that, for instance, I think the teams should be developing more knuckleballers. I think now that we've got Edgertronic and Rapsodo and all that stuff, we can quantify spin. We can, in this case, lack of spin. We can quantify movement. You'd want to see something like that. So in this case, we're talking about player development on the highest level, that you're trying to develop essentially two players within one player. This requires resources. I think that's the issue, is that you need maybe more instructors within the Rays organization, quite frankly. You need more people working on this stuff, and you need more people maybe at the lowest level. You know, if somebody gets drafted as, let's say, the best player on their high school team and does both, you need somebody from day one who could say, all right, this is the path that you're going to take. We're going to take you down this road. I mean, but, you know, if they go to LSU or whatever and they tinker with it, but don't really follow through, that is maybe not the same thing as taking a, you know, not yet fully formed 17-year-old and saying, what can we do with it? So I think this requires an organizational buy-in where they say, anybody with this kind of potential at age 17, we're going to give this a shot. And that's just, that would be unusual. It would be difficult to do, but of course the payoff could be quite large.
Connor referenced this when he was asking you about the White Sox position in the division vis-a-vis the Cleveland Indians. But we were looking at the numbers of Jose Ramirez. He was an 8-win player last year. He is underwater this year, 70 games in, 300 plate appearances in. He is worth negative 0.2 wins above replacement per Fangraphs. What happened or is happening with him?
Yeah, it's almost unprecedented. It's hard for me to think of somebody this young, right? He's in his mid-20s, and for this to happen is really something. But you look at, you know, I go to StatCast typically for stuff like this because sometimes you could see it in the contact rates and all that. Yeah, the hard hit rate has fallen off quite a bit. It was by about 4 percentage points this year. The barrel rate, which just means how often you put the ball in the barrel of the bat, that's fallen off. But Jose Ramirez was a pretty good hitter in 2017, too. And these numbers now, these fall-off numbers, look a lot like they do in 2017, or at least, you know, some more comparable in 17 than they do in 18. So at the least you could say about Ramirez, all right, well, maybe he's more of a doubles guy, but we think he can hit about 300 and do some things. I mean, he stinks. Like, he's not hitting for average. He's not hitting for power. He's not doing anything. It's just, it's a huge, huge fall off. It's hard to explain. Batting average on balls in play really stands out here. 333 3 years ago, go back to 2016, 226 this year. So is he the unluckiest hitter in the world? There's probably some bad luck involved, but it's lack of hard contact. More pop-ups this year we're seeing, which obviously is very damaging. Just a lot of struggles for a guy who, you know, you wouldn't expect a lot of struggles from. It's really a little bit of everything, a little bit of just contact eluding him and a little bit of luck. And, you know, unless he's injured, I don't have a good overarching, all-encompassing explanation other than the luck and the skill kind of deserted him at the worst time.
Jonah, I'm wondering what you think of the White Sox latest column, Zach Collins. And not necessarily, you know, what do you think of this player, though I'd love to know if you've got a comp or a favorite thing about him, but more so through the prism of catcher defense. If Collins is going to catch once or twice a week and then find his spot as a DH or maybe even a first baseman against a couple of right-handers the other two times a week and then have the bench another two times, you know what I mean? Like, we're splitting up his playing time and development a little bit into so many different chunks. I wonder if that bugs you as from a player development side, or is that, you know, kind of creative and trying to get the guy into the best matchups he can while also trying to nurture a very difficult skill, that being behind the plate?
Yeah, I think it'd be difficult for me, it'd be disingenuous for me to say, wow, the Rays are great, they're trying two-way players, and to say, yeah, this guy should only catch and should never play first base or DH. No, I mean, obviously there's room for development in multiple ways, and the thing about Collins is he can hit. You know, they've got a starting catcher in, well, reasonably good stead, although he hasn't exactly been a monster this year. McCann is the guy who's been really, really good. Castillo, the backup, has not been really good. But you look at their other positions, and Yonder Alonso in particular, where's Yonder Alonso? I mean, he's been one of the worst hitters in all of Major League Baseball. So there's room here. We talked about it before. There are dead spots in this lineup where you could slot somebody, whether it's a Collins, whether it's somebody. And Collins' minor league track record is pretty good. So I think obviously you want to be able to develop defensive ability because that's going going, even now, you know, the defensive ability is going to play in the big leagues, even with all the focus on launch angle and the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark and all that stuff. We still recognize that pitch framing is important, handling a staff is important, all that stuff. And Collins has done, you know, an okay job in the minors, but obviously you want to see more. He's only 24. There's an opportunity here. So I think, honestly, whether it comes to raise two-way players or whether it comes to somebody like Collins or whatever, you're essentially just working more. You know, this is what it is. It's if you put, I'm completely making this up, 8 hours a day into your craft, whether it's working out or nutrition or being on the field or whatever, maybe you have to put in 12. Maybe it's just that you cannot have downtime, that you're going to have to push past fatigue and do things to try to make yourself better. That's probably a very old school red ass sort of thing to say, but you know, there's only so many hours in the day and you have to try to get the most out of them. And if you're determined to play multiple positions and one of them is either catcher or pitcher, guess what, buddy? You're going to be in the cage and you're going to be on the mound and you're going to be taking the field more often than your contemporaries.
We had an impassioned Steve Stone on the show earlier today who was explaining that he is terrified about the danger that pitchers find themselves in today's baseball environment. The ball itself is livelier than ever. Pitchers are throwing harder than ever. Exit velocities are up. And because of the way pitchers are being trained to throw with max effort, there is almost no... There's no importance or no significance or stress on a pitcher being in proper balance in defensive position where guys are falling off the mound, sometimes not even seeing the ball off the bat. He said, in his words, and I'm paraphrasing here, there's going to be a pitcher. He said it's not a matter of if but when. There will be a pitcher put into a coma or killed by a line drive, and he really sounded the alarm today. Do you share those fears?
Well, Sean Newcomb was hit by a 102-mile-an-hour line drive literally on Saturday. It's not like this is some sort of, well, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. We've seen it. Jameson Taillon not that long ago. Rodon was hit in the head by a line drive at one point, and, you know, that hurt him too. So, yeah, it's very disconcerting. It's very distressing. Alex Cobb, you can go down the list of pitchers who've experienced this. What's the solution, I think, is what it comes down to. Do you put a screen on the field? Do you have pitchers pitching with helmets? We just haven't come up with a good one yet. I feel like, you know, when there were hitters getting hit and we had kind of the old school batting helmets, just make better batting helmets. But this would be a fundamental change. And it's going from a pitcher who would never wear any kind of headgear to somebody doing it, to everybody doing it, that's a little bit further afield. So I'm all for it. I don't disagree with it. First of all, Steve Stone obviously has a ton of baseball knowledge, especially when it comes to pitching. So I don't disagree here. I think what it comes down to is how do you make this happen? And I don't have a good solution for that.
Well, I wonder if the Atlantic League might have a solution, or at least part of one. Maybe even just ruling one out would be helpful. They're going to move the mound back fairly soon. We talked about this a lot in the preseason. Yep. Does that do anything for you? Will you check in on that as it goes, as a you know, baseball philosopher, essentially?
Yeah, well, of course, because what I want to know. Thank you for that. I love being a baseball philosopher.
I'm picturing you in a toga, by the way. I picture you sort of wandering peripatetically around as you instruct, as you drag your toga behind you.
This is a true story. Before I became a journalism major in college, I started as a philosophy major, and I ended up keeping philosophy as a minor. So I'm all there with you. Give me all the Descartes you can handle. So yes. I'm forgetting the question. Baseball. Oh, yeah, moving the mound back. I think there's a lot there. Obviously, injury prevention is one thing, but I want to know about breaking pitches because there's so much precision involved, right? Like if you're throwing a fastball that's relatively straight, presumably the rise or the dip or whatever shouldn't make that much of a difference. It's a couple of feet. But if you're throwing a big breaking curve, you need to be right on time. I mean, there's so much precision involved. There's a lifetime of precision involved in throwing the 60 feet, 6 inches. What happens if it's 62 or whatever? You know, I think there's something there. Are you going to be spiking balls in the dirt? Are you going to be throwing them to the backstop? Does it really mess you up? It could fundamentally change player development, frankly, because if this happens across the sport, then really starting in Little League, you need to get used to the idea, not Little League, but starting in the first level in which you throw 60 feet, 6 inches, or now 62 or 63, you need to get used to throwing that kind of pitch. So I don't know that if you're a top prospect or whatever, you can suddenly change. I think that's probably harder than it sounds to throw those additional couple of feet because, again, you're throwing it into such a tiny box. You have to deceive the hitter. Your command has to be perfect. Like, I think if they actually instituted this in the big leagues, you would see walks skyrocket for a while. That's just my first blush take, is that would be the kind of thing that would occur first, and then it would take some adjustment period from the pitcher. So, you know, it's designed to help It's designed to help in certain ways. It's designed to help maybe limit strikeouts or whatever, but I think it could have some other maybe unintended consequences.
Have the Astros done it again? Have they found another star? Jordan Alvarez, the rookie, just comes up raking. And maybe it's because I'm fresh off reading this chapter from Lindbergh's book about how good the Astros are at creating players, finding players, seeing things other people don't see. But is this another one, or is this just a kid with a good week?
No, he's for real. I mean, you look at his minor league numbers, they were spectacular. And granted, AAA, you've got the juice ball and so forth. But no, absolutely, a big breakout season in the minor leagues. If you look at my Twitter feed, it's like all Jordan Alvarez. I love this guy. He's a lot of fun. He's got 27 home runs between the two levels this year. That's ridiculous. 79 RBI. No, we don't talk about RBI. 79 RBI. Come on. So there's a lot there with Alvarez. And the thing about him is that he can beat you in so many ways. We're seeing him go oppo. We've seen him hit opposite field home runs, dead center home runs. I mean, he hit so many home runs that we started watching him in the minors, and he was doing these things. And he controls the strike zone reasonably well. Part of the thing in the minors with his walk rate was that they, you know, put out four fingers quite often because he was just terrorizing everybody. But he's come up in the big leagues. He's already got 6 walks in 7 games, and they're not IBBing him. I mean, he's earning those walks. So, yeah, I you know, all that. Now, he doesn't play much defense. He doesn't really have any speed or anything like that. But so what? If he's like 21-year-old Edwin Encarnacion, like, that's awesome. Every team should want to have somebody like that. And that's what we're seeing right now.
Well, the White Sox might in Eloy Jimenez, if you look at his numbers of late, that appear to show that he's starting to feel better, starting to come into his own a little bit. Obviously, over 60 plate appearances, anybody can be anybody. But with the pedigree and track record of Jimenez, it's June has been very, very kind to him. And is this the time to be appreciating the breakout of a future star?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's certainly there. And I think we can't discount weather here, too. I mean, you look around the league, like the last week in Denver, that crazy series that set the all-time record for runs scored in one series with the Rockies and the Padres. Well, Denver can be cold. Denver snows in April and even sometimes in early May. So the fact that we're in June and you get that dry air, it happens. And it happens in the Midwest, and it happens in the East, and it happens everywhere. And there are hitters that might have hit fly balls to the warning track, and maybe they die. And maybe they start pressing because they're hitting fly balls to the warning track in April and they die. And so they start doing things that are not right. And when the ball starts jumping off the bat, well, then you don't have to do anything except be yourself. And I think that can happen. Now, it doesn't happen to every hitter, and it's not something that you can, okay, let's go see the trends and see if this guy's crazy and if the June OPS is much higher than the April. No. But for certain hitters, it's certainly the case, and it could be the case with Jimenez. I mean, we've seen the home run spike. It's been very, very impressive. He's got, 5 in his last 8 games, and it's really coming along. So it's good to see. He's still got work to do, right? He's still striking out about 4.5 times more than he's walking, which is not necessarily good. Not because walks are the end-all be-all, but because hitters who control the strike zone, just like pitchers who control the strike zone, control the game, because at that point, the opponent is at your mercy. So if Jimenez can figure out a way to, it doesn't need to be walk more, but to work more favorable hitters counts, he's going to end up walking more as a result, and also ending up smashing the ball more, which is what you want to see. So same thing with Austin Riley, by the way, of the Braves. Austin Riley's been fantastic, but at last check, he's striking out 10 times more than he's walked. You can't keep that up. Eventually, the numbers are going to get to you. Either you improve the way you select pitches, or pitchers get you. So I think it's a little bit the same thing with Jimenez. If he improves the way that he looks at pitches, he's only going to expedite his learning curve.
Jonah, appreciate it as always. Thanks for shuffling some stuff around for us, too.
Thank you, fellas. Have a great day.
Jonah Carey, brought to you by True Green. Ready for a mosquito-free summer in Chicago? Just call True Green. They'll eliminate biting mosquitoes in your yard within 24 hours of application, guaranteed. Call 1-866-TRUE-GREEN or visit truegreen.com/mosquito-free-summer. Additional restrictions may apply. See truegreen.com for details. We're here at Gallagher Way. We're brought to you by Wintrust, the presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. Bernstein and McKnight, been very baseball-y here. It's still toddler stuff. They put the movie on. The music part of Toddler Stock is over, and now they're all watching Reservoir Dogs. And I think it's a great choice.
It's gritty. They are in for a twist, though. I don't think any of them see this coming.
They're enjoying it tremendously. I don't know that they know about Tim Roth's character until we get a little further in. So when you hear that collective toddler gasp, understand exactly how he's been operating as a double agent undercover. So you'll know it when you hear it. right? The unmistakable sound of toddlers recognizing a Tarantino twist.
Stuck in the middle with you. That's everybody's going to be dancing to it. Lawrence is here. Transition in a little while. But there are actually, believe it or not, a text or two with some interesting ideas regarding what we were talking about with Jonah and Steve Stone about protecting pitchers in a day and age where the baseball is a very dangerous object when it's being thrown at you and hit at you. Want to get into that. And also, with the NBA draft around the corner, we've heard a thing or two.
Yeah, we got to make sure we heard what we thought we heard, because I don't want to have heard it.
We need to have heard it correctly. And if we did, oh boy, yeah, do we have a problem. We'll get to it. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I don't know what the, but again, I, like I said, you're a.
John Paxson is always ready to make a draft day trade. It's about half the time, pretty much about half the time, that something happens other than just making the draft pick on draft night. So Thursday night, we'll find out. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz of the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Before we get to your thing here real quick, the White Sox have made it official. They have reinstated left-handed pitcher Jace Fry from the 10-day injured list. They have placed Wellington Castillo on the 10-day injured list, retroactive to June 17th, the strained left oblique, and they have purchased the contract of catcher Zach Collins from AAA Charlotte.
Oh, good. We don't have lineups yet, do we? Let me just give it a quick check and see if Zach Collins has been put in his very first major league lineup. Nope, not yet. Probably going to have to wait a little while. Lawrence Holmes may actually have the lineups for the Cubs and Sox by the time he's done with his show this afternoon. That'll be a fun one. Not a lot of right-handers for Zach Collins to go hit.
Lawrence Holmes with the sartorial choice of paying homage to Pato Marhedic and Karl-Heinz Grinitza today. In the canary yellow.
No love for Batata.
No love for Batata at all?
I don't remember Batata.
Ridiculous.
Hakuna Batata.
Oh, what the hell you guys are talking about?
What?
What? The Chicago Sting. That's the t-shirt Lawrence is wearing.
Yeah, they were the soccer bowl champions. They were a champion. Rudy Glenn.
Of what?
Of the NASL.
And that was a thing?
Yeah.
They
had a dance for 600.
They had a parade and everything.
They had uniforms and everything.
Well, they did. They had a championship parade.
I am
Dan has the
beta
box of it, of the championship.
Way to go, Sting. We mentioned, you heard from John Paxson coming back from break here. You mentioned that it almost half the time he makes draft day trades. If you read Casey Johnson in the Tribune yesterday, you would know that. I imagine you did. Paxson's made 8 draft day trades in his 15 drafts as lead decision maker. But what was most curious to me in this little piece yesterday from Casey Johnson, it's like 3 graphs, just so we don't, because I don't want to misquote the man, Paxson, that is, and I don't want to leave you without context. Paxson said, we're going to add another good player in this draft. We're going to spend some money in free agency where we add some vets who help our team. Casey follows. This remains the most likely scenario, even as the Bulls engaged in the Pelicans trade talks surrounding Anthony Davis that led to Saturday's blockbuster deal with the Lakers, adding a player in the first Thursday, then addressing the remaining needs via free agency, is the safe bet. But with Denzel Valentine and Chandler Hutchison both returning from injury next season, addressing big man depth has seemingly joined Paxson's publicly stated desire to upgrade at point guard.
Read that.
The most pressing.
No. I need that sentence again, counselor.
Yes, sir. Anytime.
Read that back to me.
But with Denzel Valentine and Chandler Hutchison both returning from injury next season, addressing big man depth has seemingly joined Paxson's publicly stated desire to upgrade at point guard as most pressing need.
What? Wait. why do bad players coming back have anything to do with what they want to do going forward?
Just to round out this graph. But again, this is not a shot at KC. The
no.
man's reporting
I'm
what
sure
he
I'm
sure
he's reporting. Well, you know, we're getting Denzel Valentine back. Sure, he's an NBA player who can't dunk, but, you know, we love him.
That means that wings potentially on the board at 7, like Texas Tech's Jarrett Culver or Duke's Cam Reddish, seem to be losing momentum on the Bulls.
This draft has meh written all over.
Right. So, I mean, like, on the one hand, sure, we can slap the Bulls around a little bit for liking their own guys, Denzel Valentine and Chandler Hutchison. But at the same token, like, it's what does this draft do for you?
It's a bad draft, yeah, first
so
of all.
Who
it's
are you
bad.
Interested in? What do you want to do? What do you want out of this draft? I think those are all fair questions once you get past pick number 4 or something like that, which, interestingly enough, is another report that's coming out. John Gibney, who covers the NBA draft at Draft Express on Twitter, has tweeted this. Darius Garland will conduct a last-minute workout with the Knicks tomorrow, the source told him. Garland is in serious consideration for the number 3 pick. However, Minnesota, Boston, and Chicago are teams looking at potentially trading up to number 4 Garland in mind.
I did not know until relatively recently that Darius Garland is Winston Garland's kid.
Oh, I found that out last night.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Well, he only played 5 games for Vanderbilt before the knee issues really set him off course. So I hadn't looked into the guy a whole lot, knowing that he was going to be maybe a top 5, but not the family history.
No, he's legit, but in this draft, we're tending to overrate a lot of guys just relative to their peers. Like, Jarrett Culver is fine. DeAndre Hunter, these guys are fine. Zion is probably a thing.
Probably.
Zion is Zion. If the weight doesn't become an issue, he's certainly a thing.
And to me,
but everything else is fine.
Well, to me, it's a two-player draft. It is to a lot of people. And even though the knocks have come around for Ja Morant over the last month or two since the tournament ended.
Can't guard
can
anybody.
Can he shoot?
Can't
he
guard.
Can't guard, all that kind of stuff. He is still, given the skill set I've seen, he's still very much worth rolling the dice and seeing if you can come up with a real nice player out of that guy.
There's all the Carolina kids, too. I mean, Kobe White is certainly, but Kobe White's arms are short. His arm's too short to box with God. And you don't know which position he plays, and he never really had to run the most important action in professional basketball, and that being the pick and roll.
I'd have Ja Morant even above either of those other Dukies, too, as far as whether or not you want to take the real roll of the dice. That's why it's 1, big distance, 2, still a pretty big distance than your 3, 4, and 5 guys. So we get back to the question of what the Bulls really can get out of this draft, if indeed, you know, the reports surrounding them are right, that they'd rather get the draft done than assess things in free agency after you've gotten your need kind of picked out through the NBA draft, whether that's number 7 or number 4 or number 3, whatever you want to move up to. I mean, the framework's out there, right? I mean, we saw teams move up for players last year. We saw an exchange made to get Trey to his spot and Luka Doncic to his spot with the Mavericks. The framework seems to be out there. I just, you know, yet again, you are a Bulls team that wanted a couple extra percentage points, whether it would have worked or not. The extra percentage points help to get you to a place where maybe you do get Darius Garland as opposed to have to move to get Darius Garland.
I just want to know what it's going to take, because if you trade a future first round pick with any, you know, just at all for this, that's malpractice, because this draft is just so much worse, or at least supposed to be so much worse than the next few years. Just that this is that pit. It might not be 2013 Anthony Bennett number 1, but it's supposed to be such a bad draft. You just get what you can get and just call it a year. It's just a bad year to need a top guy.
There's a couple of tweets here I find interesting. We've got Mark Strotman from NBC Sports Chicago and Draft Express, Jonathan Givony. And Givony says, source, Garland is back at 100% after his knee surgery in November and will be ready to play Summer League pending approval from the team that drafts him. Garland has had a number of impressive private workouts recently with the Lakers, Cavaliers, and Chicago Bulls. So what Strotman adds, he says, okay, this got interesting. The Bulls reportedly had a private workout with Garland, but didn't post pictures of it on the team website. like they did with Culver and Dumbuya.
Uh-huh.
Last year, the Bulls showed all workouts with options at seven that they had with Knox and Carter and Bridges and Trae Young, etc. Even had media availability for Trae Young's workout. So there could be some skullduggery going on here.
Would
or
that be an agent thing?
Don't tell Hawk.
No. Agents are ruining the game. Would that be an agent thing, though? Like, if his knee, you know, if you're trying to select as best you can the place you want to go, I'm just thinking from Garland's perspective, and you can do that some through these individual workouts by being a little selective with what you're willing to release and some of the information that is out there, are you able, because you only played five games last season at Vanderbilt, is that a way to maybe control who wants you and who gets you?
Well, there's some more information about what is rumored to be amid the Bulls' plans, and I want to get that to you after a brief timeout. Bernstein and McKnight from Gallagher Way on the Score.
By the way, a good friend of ours, Mike Wilbon, who, of course, is a great, he's a national TV guy and also terrific writer in Washington, D.C. He's a Chicago native, and I've known Mike a long time, and he said that one of the biggest mistakes they made, and by the way, Josh McCown announced his retirement this past day after 20 years of playing in the National Football League. Seven different teams, including the Bears. And Mike himself said that one of the biggest mistakes the Bears made was keeping Cutler, re-signing him to an extension where they could have kept McCown, and McCown could have done a lot more, and I agree with him on that. And I think most fans wanted them to keep McCown when they let him go. We knew they weren't going to do that.
Not a bit. That's the realness there. Skypoint to the great Grobber. Here's another tweet from Draft Express.
What do you got?
Darius Garland will conduct a last-minute workout in Tarrytown with the New York Knicks tomorrow. Garland is in serious consideration for the number 3 pick. Minnesota, Boston, and Chicago are teams looking at potentially trading up to number 4 with Garland in mind.
That's the question you ask then. I mean, the Bulls want something out of this draft. You have to go up and do it, and I'm with Rick. I think in this draft in particular, though Garland is interesting because he's kind of a mystery, and the reports around him are great. You know, the potential seems fantastic. A point guard who could, you know, get his own shot, but also maybe have the potential to facilitate a little bit as well. That's kind of the question around him. As I understand it, I just don't know that I want to get rid of any future draft assets, given where the Bulls are, for a guy in this draft to mix in with the team you've got. That seems short-sighted.
If Barrett falls to 4 and you trade up to 4, I'm down. I'm in for that.
Sorry, Barrett?
Yeah, like if the Knicks actually did that and took Garland at 3 and Barrett was there at 4, yes, I do that.
Okay. All right, and Barrett would, it's interesting because as long as you have Zach LaVine, it's going to be hard to incorporate another player with an alpha scorer mentality. And Barrett has that. That's the management of that, and the fact that you're trusting Jim Boylan to figure it out complicates everything.
Well, at that point, isn't the trade like what it was proposed for and LaVine or something like that for Lonzo or 4 and Lonzo for 7 and LaVine?
Yeah, if LaVine goes and Barrett is your alpha scorer, then you probably could do that.
So you're bringing in Lonzo Ball and R.J. Barrett into the mix with Otto and with Markkanen.
Forget LeVar and just view Lonzo as Lonzo
as
a player.
I try very hard to forget LeVar every day.
Yeah, Lonzo's good. Lonzo's really good. He's a good defensive player. His jump shot's a little janky, as we know, but he is a starting point guard that is above average. On balance,
that
total.
That trade and the subsequent roster construction screams relevancy to me. It does not scream anything other than relevancy.
Got further from winning a championship.
No.
NBA hell.
No, that is just right there, smack dab, with maybe a 7 spot in the playoffs, assuming that there's no more mutiny.
We are just a little bit right here, smack dab at Gallagher Way, right outside Wrigley Field. The Scores broadcast day is going to continue with Lawrence Holmes. The whole station's going to be here broadcasting up until first pitch at 7:05, the Wintrust Crosstown Series. And we're here because of Wintrust, presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. Lawrence Holmes takes over. We will do transition with him next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.